This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good tunes today, Timmy.
Yeah.
Timmy, who is this?
He's an up-and-coming performer. Have you heard of him, Andrew?
That's Sir Paul McCartney.
And you're called Sir often, but then it's followed by, please leave, you're making a scene.
I gotta say, I was a little bit disappointed I didn't get to go see Paul McCartney, because he's a legend. Actually, it's a good call. Timo Solani and Paul McCartney, a couple legends right there. I like the connection.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
What kind of... We need a sound effect just when I say something and then there's silence. Because
yeah, I think the silence is the sound effect.
Trust me, I'm not trying... I'm not going for that, folks who are listening out there. I'm just trying to...
We'll just get
you know just what, Drew?
Crickets.
I'm just trying to be myself.
Just crickets.
I don't try to be anybody else but myself.
And we're all thankful for that. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Damon Tritter is there. Very few tickets remain for both shows tonight, so give them a call, 488-4520, or you can buy them online at rumorscomedyclub.com. It's also time, believe it or not, to start planning your December holiday parties, and Rumors is a great place for that. All the information is available on the website, rumorscomedyclub.com. Gentlemen, a couple of signings this week in the NHL. I want to start with the one that the Minnesota Wild did. As this guy, you're going to see this guy a lot in Winnipeg over the next 5 years. That's Jason Pominville signing a 5-year, $28 million contract extension with the Minnesota Wild, an average annual value, a salary cap hit of $5.6 million. The Wild acquired Pominville at the trade deadline last year. Are you surprised that they gave him that much term and that much money for a guy who's 30 years old?
No, because they traded for him last year and they couldn't let him go. They traded a lot for him, Drew, and I think that usually is a factor as well. You know, when you look at Jason Pominville, what you like about him, he's got a really good shot. He can play the point on the power play. He's a top line right winger for them. By all accounts, good in the room. You know, he's not a guy you build a team around, but he's a guy that you add with the guys you build a team around. I think they want to build their team around Koivu and Parise, so he fits in well there, I think. In terms of the term, and no pun intended, you know, a $5.6 million cap hit is exactly the same cap hit that Blake Wheeler got, which I thought was interesting. Blake Wheeler got 6 years. Jason Pominville got 5. And Jason Pominville is four years older than Blake Wheeler. So you take a year off, you have the same cap hit. If you were to ask general managers who they prefer, I think that'd be a really interesting question. Because while they're both right wingers, they're different. You know, Pominville's more the shooter, and Wheeler really is more of a playmaker. Doesn't have that quick release like Pominville does. But once Wheeler signed that contract, I am almost sure that his agent said, "Hey, well, I mean, Pominville's worth just as much as Wheeler is," and Wild probably said, "Well, hey, you know, he's a little older than Wheeler is. Wheeler's going to some, you know, primary years, and he's not." And they said, okay, fine, we'll take a year off. And that's probably where they came to the number. I mean, that's oversimplifying it, but that's probably close to how they got to it.
I'm a big fan of Pominville. He was a late second-round pick of the Sabres, and he didn't start to really come on until his third year. And he was excellent for the Sabres, a point-of-game player, really. One of the things, Richie, that I think is often not talked about enough, or maybe an underrated aspect of Pominville's game, is he's extremely durable. He's had 5 full seasons in the NHL, and there was a streak there where I think he was in his fifth year. I think it was something like 300 games or 400 games. He was up there with Henrik Sedin at one point for the Ironmen, and then he missed a few games about 3 years ago. But he is very consistent, rarely gets injured, mm-hmm. and as you mentioned, he is a top level offensive player. He's a first line player on any team in the NHL.
68, 80, 66, 62, yep. 52, 73 points. I mean,
Yep.
You know, you're looking at a guy who's puts up big numbers. You're right.
Yeah. He's a sniper, but he's also got that passing element to his game. Mm-hmm. And that was a big trade for Chuck Fletcher in the Minnesota Wild. I mean, that was I like that trade, and it didn't translate to playoff success for them last year. But the Wild have no shortage of offensive weapons there on the top line, and Koivu and Parise and Suter. And I have concerns about their defense after Suter, and then, you know, but
it's a lot of young players there who have some talent. Yeah, you know, Scandella, like that. Spurgeon, Brodin's a great young player.
Yep.
So, you know, I
didn't talk about Charlie Coyle either. He's a guy that that was a huge part of the Brent Burns trade. So the Wild aren't just looking to make the playoffs this year. They're looking to, you know, go deeper in the playoffs, because when you have this amount of talent on the team, and, you know, we all know that Parise and Suter were locked up long term for the Minnesota Wild, but they've got a lot of talent there, and you know, the Jets are going to see them a lot this year, and we're going to see a lot of Pominville. And if you didn't know how good he was, you're probably going to see him score some goals this year against the Jets, unfortunately.
Do you worry about him breaking down at all towards the end of that contract?
Not really, Drew. As he speaks to his reliability, the guy missed 9 games over a period of 6 years, from 2012 and 2006. Yep. Another thing is, you know, Jason Pominville, the way he plays the game, is not a kind of a style of play that really will wear down too much. Now, at the end of the contract, you probably won't get as good value as you will at the beginning, if you get a ton of value at all. But I don't think the way he plays the game will negatively affect him too much over time.
Pominville is—he's not a power forward. No one's going to confuse him as a power forward. He just does, like we talked about it, you know, with the 5 full seasons with the Sabres, and then one of them he missed, you know, 8 games or whatever. But his style of game—he's Pominville to me is kind of similar to Spezza in the way he plays. I know it's a different position, but he's just always, you know, great skater, underrated skater, but he's got great vision on the ice, and he always seems to have the puck, and he always seems to be kind of a distributor of the puck. And I think, you know, he's going to be good again last year. He was a point per game, after he was acquired by the Wild, and there's no reason to expect, you know, him not to put up big numbers again this year.
What number are you hoping for? 60 points, 65 points from Pominville, or are you hoping it's somewhere closer to the 75, 80 mark?
You know, I think 65 and up, but the guy has been a 65 and up is what you're expecting. You're playing with Koivu, who's a very good passer, and Zach Parise makes people better. So, yeah, and Pominville can pass too. So, I would say you're looking for 65 plus.
He's got 43 career power play goals. He's a guy that's going to get time on the power play. Also, Richie, he's a guy that can play the point on the power play.
We mentioned that.
So, yeah, you did mention that. You know what? I'm trying to take credit for Richie's good points, but you know, he's fantastic. I'd take him on my team if I had a team.
Andrew, let's not. When you trade for a guy and you give up a lot, you have to sign him. Because if you're trading young talent or picks, whatever it may be, for a guy and you can't lock him up, look at Kessel. You don't think that's Kessel? They had to sign Kessel. And we'll talk about that in a second. You had to sign Kessel because you gave up those 2 first rounders in the second. If you don't sign him, it just looks egg all over your face. So,
you know, we got to mention something too, Richie, about Pominville that I think often gets a little bit misconstrued, if you want to say it that. People say, well, the Leafs had to give Kessel the money because someone else is going to give him the money. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, maybe. But in the Leafs' case, he's a huge part of their future, and he has been a huge part of their past. He's been their best player over the last few years. So that's more so what it's about. But with Pominville, the Sabres' fire sale was on last year, right?
Right.
So, I mean, and people were circling around.
Even if they didn't complete the fire sale.
And the Sharks were circling around Pominville and Derek Roy, and we heard that Ryan Miller and Vanek were even going. I mean, the Sabres are in a full tilt rebuild. So Pominville is the type of guy that the Wild really wanted. They got. Other teams wanted him. And now they want to lock him up for the next 4 years, and they did.
Other signing this week came in Boston, where they re-signed Dennis Seidenberg to a 4-year, $16 million contract. Average annual value salary cap hit of $4.0 million. It's just another case of the Bruins getting some decent value for a key member of their back end.
You're talking about a guy who started off, he's playing in Philly, he's playing in Carolina. He locks into Boston, he's 32 years old, and he's built like a truck, and he can skate. He moved the puck pretty well. He's turned into a real nice player, a nice top 4 option there in Boston. And Peter Chiarelli gets stuff done. I mean, you know, talk is cheap, And actions certainly speak louder than words, and I think Peter Chiarelli is a prime example of that because he just gets stuff done. And you gotta love it when you're the Boston Bruins, Drew, and you play the style of that they do. You need to have guys like Dennis Seidenberg in your lineup because you have an identity. He played 24 minutes a game last year, the second most minutes on the team. They're going to be paying him $4 million. He can hit. He can do a lot of things. And the Bruins need tough guys. They need guys who can do different things. And I think Seidenberg brings that to the table. I think that's a very reasonable contract. You have, based on the fact that Ferentz got the numbers he got when he was a free agent at an older age, you have to think that, you know, Seidenberg would have got more if he had hit the open market, which would have been after this season.
Well, you know, he probably would have got some more, but it's hard to believe he would be any better of a defenseman, you know, next year on a different team than he would be with the Boston Bruins playing with Zdeno Chara.
Fair enough, but I mean, they moved those combinations around over time, Drew, and he played 23 and a half, almost 24 minutes last year. Ferentz played 4 minutes less than him. 4.5 minutes less than him. Ferentz netted 3.25 a year on a four-year deal at age 34. Seidenberg would have been 32 next year before he signed the deal. And I think could have got more than four for 4 years. But hey, I give him credit. He's happy there. He knows he can win there because he can certainly win in Boston. And I like when players say, you know what, I don't need to have the big payday. I am happy where I am. I like the city. I like the fans. And most of all, I like to win.
I find it interesting just the way the contracts are structured, that both Seidenberg and Chara will now expire the same year after this contract extension.
Right. And Seidenberg and Chara are, you can make the argument, they're the best shutdown pair in the NHL. They're certainly a top three pair. You throw in like the Duncan Keiths and the Seabrooks, or if you want to throw in Ryan Suter and Brodin are good. I mean, you know, there's a reason why those guys have worked so well together. And Seidenberg, he offers some offense. He's you know, Richie mentioned he's built like a truck. He's a very physical defenseman, and he's one of the reasons why the Boston Bruins, as Richie said, can play that system, because he's not an easy guy to move around. He closes the gaps, and he's a prototypical shutdown guy. And I think it's a good contract. I'm a big fan of Seidenberg's, and he's a guy that is excellent in the playoffs. He's got the cup, and they obviously went to the final last year. So it's that was an easy signing for Chiarelli.
Yeah, but a good signing. That guy knows what he's doing. He's on the ball.
Before we go to break, an update from Jets Skate earlier today. Toby Enstrom, this is coming into us via our good buddy Darren Bombing here of TSN 1290. Toby Enstrom did not practice. He is day-to-day. It was a maintenance day. He should be able to play tomorrow night. As for Grant Clitsam, he did practice today, and he may be ready to play tomorrow night. So
somebody on Tampa was hour-to-hour earlier, according to Steve Yzerman.
Hour-to-hour?
Mm-hmm. Has anybody
did he have, like, the stomach flu or something?
Richie, has anybody ever been nanosecond to nanosecond?
I'm not sure.
Hour to hour.
Yeah.
Hour to hour. Stevie Y getting really specific with that. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Phil Kessel's contract extension, and we're going to play a Who Would You Rather Have game involving that contract. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca, tomorrow evening, 7 p.m. puck drop, the Jets and the Anaheim Ducks. Live from MTS Center, coverage gets underway on this fine station at 4 p.m. with H&L, and then Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Collision and Glass pregame power hour at 6 p.m. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center is an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at www.lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, the Toronto Maple Leafs backed the truck up to the door of Phil Kessel earlier this week, signing him to an 8-year contract extension worth $64 million. Before we get into our comparable game, Richie, Ezzy and I spoke about this on Wednesday's NHL Midweek Show. Your thoughts on the contract?
The Leafs were between a rock and a hard place, Drew. Phil Kessel likely said, give me $8 million for the maximum amount of years, or see ya. I think the Leafs thought the cap will likely go up. You're a top goal scorer. You've become a top 10, top 15 point producer. We lose you for nothing and have Dougie Hamilton and Sagan or whoever's, you know, come from Sagan in Boston. It's going to be a tough one, just tough pill to swallow. And I think the Leafs had very little leverage here. And that's a good job by Kessel and his agent saying, we're in the last year of the deal here. We don't need to sign. Somebody's going to give us eight mil a year on the open market. We know that. So either you match that now, you have all the money in the world, or you don't. And cool, see ya. And I don't think it was that complicated of a negotiation. I'm sure they asked for 10 and 9 and all that, you know, big money. And the Leafs offered 6. And in reality, you're offering it knowing the middle ground is likely where you're going to end. And I think that's how it happened.
Right. And when you look at the comparables, it would be hard for his agent to argue that he's Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, mm-hmm. Steven Stamkos, you know, the top 3 or 4 players in the NHL. He's a top 10 scorer. He's a bona fide top 10 scorer in the NHL. And I wasn't surprised at all about the 8-year, $64 million contract. And I know you want to get into the comparables, Drew, with other players. And he's right around where he should be, maybe a slight overpay. But he's probably where he should be. And for me now, Kessel's got the contract behind him. And the Leafs, who made the playoffs last year for the first time in 9 years, want to take that next step. And Randy Carlyle has said that he doesn't want Phil Kessel to be a one-dimensional player, and he wants him to add a defensive element to his game and become more of a two-way player and be harder along the boards and all that. And, you know, Phil Kessel, you can't knock him or take anything away from him, because the last couple of years, or last year and a half, Richie, he's been consistent. He had a few, you know, scoring droughts. But for the most part, the guy's one of the best snipers off the rush. Yeah. He's got one of the best shots. He's got great hands, good speed. I mean, you know, he deserves to be paid as a top player. I think now the debate over the next coming years is going to be, is he the type of guy that can carry the team on his back?
That's right.
Right? Because, like, the Getzlaffs and the Perrys and the Crosbys, they've all proven that they can do that. So can he do it, right?
You know, the other... You know, he's not Jonathan Taves, and he's not Evgeny Malkin, and he's not Sidney Crosby. But he's probably the next level of star. And I think he's matured a lot.
He certainly seems like he's more comfortable in his skin.
And he seems more aggressive than before. You watched the Leafs play. I've only played a couple of games. I've caught a bit of them.
And you're not just talking about the John Scott hack attack.
I'm talking a little bit about that, Izzy. I mean, you know, people were mad about that and everything. But let me tell you something. I'd rather Phil Kessel do that
than get beat up.
Yeah, that's right.
Sure. I mean, I didn't really have a problem with how he responded.
What about the second slash?
He shouldn't have done it. Don't get me wrong. But the idea is the fire.
First slash one.
That's how he thought he had to defend himself. But he had the fire and kind of the willingness to do that and stick up for himself.
You know what he's saying? He's saying, I'm a superstar. You don't get to take liberties with me.
But you watch him overall, he just looks more agitated, and I like it.
Sure. He's got a bit more of a sandpaper to his game.
Because he was soft before. Remember, but when his draft year, he was supposed to be number one at the beginning.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So,
let's talk some comparables, and these aren't specifically apples to apples in every situation.
Or discuss as number one, I should qualify.
Yeah. Yeah.
Could you pick a different type of fruit?
Yeah. Sorry, you're traumatized. Grapefruits to grapefruits.
Or avocados to avocados.
Is that a fruit?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a fruit.
Pretty sure it's a fruit.
Okay.
You know, Drew, stick with me. I'll teach you a few things.
Oh boy. Phil Kessel. Or Rick Nash?
Phil Kessel. I think Rick Nash, and I like to watch Rick Nash, but Rick Nash is overrated. I've said it on the show before. He's hard to play with. He's a big body. He's a skillful player, and he had a really good year last year. But I'm taking Phil Kessel, guys.
I'm a big fan of Rick Nash, but he's struggled, and now he's on the Rangers, of course, and Richie, the knock on, or I guess... Rick Nash's downfall, or I guess not downfall, but he never had, you know, an elite level center in Columbus, right?
I've heard that.
Sorry, but I'm just saying, I'm not saying that, you know, that, I mean, if we're comparing the two players, but what I'm saying is, you know, he played with Stepan for a little bit, and then he was playing with Richards for a little bit, and he is a tough player to play against because Nash is a big guy. He's a power forward. He's a bigger guy than Kessel, and we all know how good Rick Nash can be. He's been on so many highlight reels for TSN. He has the ability to go around defensemen, and he's got nifty hands and all that, but he has problems at 5-on-5 with the speed of the game. He's not the fastest guy, and he is a sniper, and he gets his goals, and he was pretty good for the New York Rangers last year.
He was.
But Rick Nash is now, I think it's in his 10th year, and it's getting to the point where he hasn't really elevated his game to the next level, hasn't had the success in the playoffs, and he was only there once with Columbus. But I think Rick Nash is now kind of
Phil Kessel's the guy who scares you a lot more than Rick Nash does on a shift-by-shift
and
basis.
And Rick Nash, I think, is still got offensive talent. I think he's going to be in the NHL for quite a bit longer. It's not like he's
only 29.
Towards the end of his career, no. But, you know, he, at this point, is not at that same level as Phil Kessel.
Phil Kessel...
I think he's a better player. I think he's a little bit of the better player. I think Rick Nash is a little bit overrated, and I've thought Kessel in the past has been overrated as well. I think he's a little bit of the better player. I think Rick Nash is still a great player, but I think Kessel's probably a slight edge.
Phil Kessel at $8 million salary cap hit, or Eric Staal at $8.25 million?
See, but again, this is...
I'll take Eric Staal any day of the week.
Yeah, I'm taking Eric Staal too, because he's a big center. He can skate. He can do a lot of things. And a center is more valuable than a winger.
And I think we got to throw something in here because, you know, in the salary cap era, we're always, you know, talking about players' salaries, and it's actually not my favorite part of the game, favorite part of the sport, but we got to talk about it. But Eric Staal gives you a lot more
in the
game,
absolutely,
not just goals and assists. I mean, Eric Staal had the Stanley Cup earlier on in his career, and now Carolina is struggling because they don't have the depth that they used to have. But Eric Staal puts his team on his back. Remember the goal Eric Staal scored in Winnipeg, where he just kind of muscled his way to the net. And I mean, he's an elite player. He'll be on Team Canada at the Olympics.
At 70 points, he's at Eric Staal over the past six seasons. This is 2006-07. He had 70 points. Then he had 82. Then he had 75. Then he had 70. Then he had 76. Then he had 70. Then he had 53 last year in 48 games. Over that course of time. Seasons, he missed 11 games.
He doesn't miss. He's durable.
He's a center. He can fly.
And
he can play the wing.
He plays a power game,
he does,
too. I mean,
I agree.
He's a physical guy.
Yeah. He's a better player. No question about it. Yeah. Every GM.
You know what? I'm glad we're talking about how good Eric Staal is.
I agree, because nobody talks about him.
Yeah.
Phil Kessel.
Point a game in the playoffs for his career. 43 points in 43 games.
I know the answer to this one, but I'll ask it anyways, because their cap hits are pretty similar. Only a quarter of a million dollar difference. Eric Staal or Ryan Getzlaff?
Yeah, it's Ryan Getzlaff, and I mean
that's a close one though, Richie.
I think Getzlaff's not as good as he was a couple of years ago, and well, he was good last year. I still think I think he'll be better than he is. But again, you're talking about a guy who can quarterback your power play. He actually has a good shot when he does shoot it. Who can command a game as a center? He's a big guy. He can control the boards. Getzlaff's a good player, but Getzlaff's better.
Getzlaff will drop the gloves too once in a while.
Yeah, we know how big of a difference that makes.
Okay.
We'll get into that a little bit later on.
Let's get into Evander Kane's fight, okay?
We'll talk about it later on.
I'll go toe-to-toe with you. Hey, Drew, I went toe-to-toe with you on midweek.
Oh, you backed down. You were like, I don't think fighting should be allowed anymore.
Okay, well,
after spending the entire day advocating for fighting on Twitter, when push came to shove, you turtled like the biggest turtling fighter there is.
That's not true.
Absolutely it was. It's like, well, they're getting hit in the head a lot, so maybe they shouldn't anymore.
I didn't say that.
You turtled.
No, that's not at all. I said that fighting... I think fighting should be reduced. I didn't think that stage fighting has a place in the game. I'm pro fighting still. Find a clip where I said anything similar, Drew, to what you just said.
I'm not interested in actual evidence. I'm interested in what I believe.
Well, you just made that up. So.
I didn't. Remus is confirming that you turtled.
We'll play the clip then.
Well, I do want to get into it, so we'll see.
We have fighting coming up. I think it's next segment. So
that's not true. What
that
you
was
just
fighting
said
right
true.
There. But.
Phil Kessel or Claude Giroux. Again, there's only 2 points. The difference is Claude Giroux's 8.275.
Claude Giroux.
I mean, I think
he's a better player. I mean, he's just a better player. And every GM is going to take Claude Giroux. So maybe not every, but 25 out of 30 will take Claude Giroux. It's a center again, guys. Center are more valuable than wingers. They need to do more. They need to be better defensively. They have to be able to disperse, you know, be able to get rid of the disperse the puck. They have to be able to do a lot of different things. And Claude Giroux is a great player. And he's better than Phil Kessel. Phil Kessel would have got the money, though, because Phil Kessel does what you need to do in what that one skill that you need more than anything else in the NHL.
Goal scoring.
Score goals.
And Toronto's not as deep of a team. Well, actually, they're pretty deep now, but
yeah.
On Philadelphia, Giroux has a different role. And again, he's a better two-way player. And as Richie mentioned, center ice is a different position. I think there's more offensive talent there with Giroux, too. I think this year, you know, he didn't have an awful year last year, but compared to a couple of years ago, he wasn't as dominant maybe. So I think if we're going straight up again, which we are, I'll take Giroux.
Phil Kessel at $8 million or Zach Parise at $7.538 million.
Well, that's a little bit different because Parise is well regarded as a hockey player, but his output isn't maybe what you think it is. And I might surprise you by that, but if you look at Zach Parise's stat line, and stat lines don't tell the whole picture, we certainly know that. But if you look at Zach Parise's stat line over the course of his career, he's been a 30 goal scorer, 31, 32, 45 of that great year, 38, 31. And his assist totals are fairly similar to his goal totals. They're pretty similar players in terms of their output, I think. Now Parise's been in the league longer, so obviously he's going to have a higher total, but Parise is a harder worker, and he's not as gifted in terms of he doesn't score as naturally as Phil Kessel does. A lot of his goals are because of his hard work, and he goes to the net. But you're looking at a left winger versus a right winger. You're looking at different styles, but you're looking at similar outputs. So I think that one's probably a wash.
Right, and Parise has taken a little bit of time to recover from that knee injury. Mm-hmm. Remember, he had that 94-point season with the Devils, and then he had the knee injury where he missed a lot of time. And it's changed him a little bit, but he is a player that relies more on his physicality and kind of those hardworking areas than Kessel. Kessel's the type of guy, he'll go to the slot and all that, but he's more off the wing, and Parise still scores off the wing, but I think I'd agree with that. So that's a comparison that's difficult. I'll take Parise over Kessel, New Jersey bias aside.
Last one, two right wingers, Phil Kessel or Corey Perry?
I'm taking Corey Perry just because I think what he can add aside from the goal scoring is great. I mean, that's controlling the boards, and he can be more physical. And
he'll beak Patrick Waugh if he needs to.
I'll beak Patrick Waugh. But when you look at output, I mean, Corey Perry has a 50-goal season, but you're looking at him, Parise, these guys, it's fairly similar. I think most GMs take Perry, but I think there's some that take Kessel.
If it's Kessel, Perry, I'll go Perry again because I think Perry's offensive numbers have dipped a little bit, and I think he's still a more well-rounded player. And it's pretty funny, with the exception of Parise, a lot of those guys are a lot different type of player than Kessel. But I think Perry's still, you know, even though he might not get back to the 50-goal pace, Drew, I still think he can still be a consistent 40-goal man. So I'll go Perry.
Let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to talk Patrick Waugh and his coaching debut in the NHL, which was certainly significant. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on tsn1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. TSN 1290.ca. Tomorrow night, 7 p.m., the Jets and the Anaheim Ducks face off at MTS Center. Coverage begins 4 p.m. on this fine station with Hustler and Lawless. 6 p.m., Rick Rell from the Don Vito Collision and Glass pregame power hour. Tweet coming in via our good friend, Anaheim Ducks color radio analyst, Dan Wood. Mm-hmm. Dan Wood saying that tonight it is Jonas Hiller in net for the Ducks in Minnesota. So I think it's relatively safe to say, barring something unforeseen, that it looks like it's probably going to be Victor Fast in net for the Anaheim Ducks tomorrow night here in Winnipeg. So we expect that it's going to be Victor Fast for the Ducks tomorrow. Dustin Penner is making his season debut for the Ducks tonight in Minnesota. You might see him still in the lineup tomorrow night. Local, what is he from, Winkler?
Yeah, he's from Winkler, and he might have some pancakes before that game as well.
Are you going to have pancakes with him?
You have to dress him because, exactly. It's a home game.
He's got family in town. I mean, if you don't dress him, you just create animosity, really. Mm-hmm. You hear all those stories about, the beginning of the end of the relationship between Player X and Team X is when he had bought 24 tickets for all his family in town, and then they healthy scratched him.
That's true. You know what? Got to get him in the game.
Patrick Waugh, he got into the game pretty quickly.
Sure did.
Didn't take him long there in Colorado to make a scene. It was pretty entertaining. Mm-hmm. And we were all just waiting for it to happen. Are you surprised it happened as quickly as it did?
Nope. And what's funny about what happened is that the Colorado Avalanche were unbelievable in that game. Ryan O'Reilly was great. Nathan MacKinnon was great in his first NHL game. And the game was completely over. And if you watch that, and I was watching that live, thankfully I have the NHL Center Ice package, and he put Bortolo and McCormick on the ice, and there was some rough stuff happening at the end of the game. No fights, but guys were pushing at the end of the game. Anaheim was down, and there was some tough guys on the ice, and it all started with Corey Perry and Patrick Waugh going at it. I mean, you can watch it on YouTube now and see for yourself, but it was Corey Perry who was beaking at Patrick Waugh, and then Patrick Waugh got into it with him, and then he went at Bruce Boudreau. And, I was pretty shocked when he went over there and started moving. By the way, why was that glass moving so easily?
I was wondering the same thing. You would think it should be a little more secure than that.
Yeah, I don't think Patrick Waugh is, as strong as Hulk Hogan, that he can just, move that glass that easily. But
I was wondering the same thing. I was like, I think you should, maybe double bolt that in their Pepsi Center maintenance facilities.
Well, apparently they're actually they reinforced it. Like the next day, they started, changing the partition there, that piece of glass, because they don't want that to happen again. I guess they're expecting Patrick Waugh to do that every game now.
Probably. He's probably not too far off. Let me ask you, do you think that, if Patrick Waugh shows that level of passion on a regular basis as opposed to an irregular basis, does that wear thin on his own players, you think?
I don't think so. I think people are so averse to personality these days. Everything needs to be so cookie cutter. And so somebody does something and shows some emotion and goes a little crazy, and oh my goodness, how can it be that way? I like it. I like the intensity. And as he was mentioning the game, I was watching the game as well. I thought, look at the intensity he's bringing to game one. He thinks these guys are good enough to make the playoffs. And that's what I got from it. And you're not going to go after my player. And Lovejoy and MacKinnon, and that was the issue that Waugh was really angry about.
Yep.
If you watch the game and you saw earlier, MacKinnon burned Lovejoy wide. And in 20 games from now, he'll burn him wide and he'll score on that play. He was a little bit, if you were watching the game, even if you weren't, he beat Lovejoy. Lovejoy's a good skater, and MacKinnon beat him. He's a great skater, MacKinnon. And he kind of faded away with the backhand. But they were going at it a bit. He's protecting his young players. I think that brings the team together. The intensity, the competitiveness, I think that all brings the team together. If you're yelling at other players, why is that going to wear on your players? I don't think it does. I think it wears on you if you're yelling at your own players all the time. I think what Patrick Waugh brings to the table is different. It's somewhat unique, and, God forbid somebody behind the bench show emotion every once in a while. Because lots of these guys now just stand there with their hands crossed, and Noel does it, and Daryl Sutter does it, and that's not to say they're not good coaches, but everybody's different, and you can be yourself. Carlisle's very animated back there. Michel Therrien, maybe to a fault at times, is very animated back there. John Tortorella as well. I mean, Tortorella and Carlisle have won cups, but so have more some of the calmer coaches. Be yourself, and that's what I like about it.
And you can't forget that Patrick Waugh, as a goaltender, throughout his career, was a passionate guy. Mm-hmm. He would talk to guys on the ice. He would be animated. He was a real leader for the Montreal Canadiens and the Colorado Avalanche. He wasn't afraid to show passion, and he was a longtime coach and GM in the QMJHL. Same thing. He was passionate, and this is what is to be expected. And we're obviously not going to see Patrick Waugh, you know, pushing, you know, panes of glass every game. But he's going to be emotional throughout the season. I mean, that's just the way he is. And a $10,000 fine is nothing, right? Like, that's... What is that? That's...
Well, Bob McKenzie said it's actually out of pocket. Usually they just put it down in security, and then after good behavior, they get it back. But yeah, apparently not in this case. Too bad.
What do you think about Bruce Boudreau's comments? And here's the quote. He said Roy's antics, or Patrick Waugh's antics, were Bush League, and added that Waugh is going to be in for a long year if he's going to yell at every player and yell at the refs at every stoppage of play. It's not the way the game is played.
Well, Patrick Waugh's got 4 Stanley Cups. So, I mean, I think he's earned the respect of, you know, not being called Bush League.
Well, you don't think that, I mean, one thing yelling, it's another thing pushing over the partition. Do you think,
I like it.
I'm not saying get away of his take his personality away, but, you know, going over there and shoving the glass and...
I think it's something you say after, if it happens 20 games in a row, then yeah, okay, obviously you got to calm down a bit and pick your spots, but it's one game, and maybe that one game happens as game 48 and it's not a big deal, but because it happens as game one, it's a big deal.
Richie's talking, just quickly, yeah. Drew, like, you know... Sure. Is it inappropriate? Yeah. I mean, but he knows what he's doing, and hockey is an emotional game. It's a game of passion. You know, most of the fights happen because, you know, two guys decide that they both want to go. It takes two to tango, as they say. But Richie's talking about, you know, hockey being cookie cutter and all that. I mean, show some emotion. I mean, it's not like Drew, pardon me, it's not like Patrick Waugh was...
People get us confused all the time.
But people, Amy Houston of this station got me and you confused, by the way,
yeah,
last night.
I'll tell you what, Amy's in my bad books right now, let me tell you.
And then actually, as you weren't there, but on the way out, Harvey Rosen walked out and said, Ezra to Drew.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
Which really means I need to start just changing a lot of things in my life.
We're together a lot, so... But you know what I'm saying, though, Drew? I mean, it's not like he was throwing hockey sticks over the glass. I mean, you know, he didn't hurt anybody. He was just, you know, and he didn't expect the piece of glass to fall over. He was just trying to, you know, take out some anger. And, nobody got hurt. It was kind of one of those spur-of-the-moment things. He's going to be doing that. If people think, you know, Patrick Waugh is going to be, you know, hucking hockey sticks and, you know, shaking glass every game, I don't think that's the case. I think he'll definitely, yell at the opponent if they're yelling at him. But I don't think that we should get too carried away and start. I think Bruce Boudreau calling him Bush League was maybe a bit of a slap in the face.
You know what, though? Bruce Boudreau is a competitive guy who shows emotion too. So they're just getting an emotional battle here. I like it. You know, get some spice. It's hard to make the playoffs these days with this new format.
Decent point coming in from Remus on the other side of the glass.
All right, just turn the mics off.
Okay, we're done now. Remus says, if the piece of glass, the partition, doesn't move, does anybody talk about this?
I think so, when you go up there and are pushing it. And first of all, he must have known it was going to move because of the way he pushed it, right? Because otherwise he probably would have broken his hand.
Sure. By the way, Richie, I didn't know that Remus was like a philosopher. Like, if a tree falls in the forest and there's no one there to hear it, does it make a sound? Like,
well, if Remus is through the glass and says a lot of stuff, we can't hear him anyway. So there you go.
Is this a good opportunity to talk about Remus's dating tips?
Yeah, wow.
I'll let you take it.
Well, I mean, we were out last night and Remus's new girlfriend was telling us that the other night he asked her if she wanted to go to Applebee's to watch the UFC game. Faux pas.
Let's go to break.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. To the left, Ezra Ginsberg. To my far left, Richard Pollock. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. And Michael Remus is behind the glass over there doing whatever it is that he does.
By the way, nice pay it forward right there that just happened during the commercial break, Drew. Assistant Program Director Rack just came in, needed $10, and Drew lent him $10. That was a nice gesture. You know, you're a good guy. Seriously.
Yeah, as he asked me for a quarter earlier, and I said, no way.
Take it from my cold, dead hands.
Clark MacArthur making news. Another guy ripping Randy Carlyle.
What did MacArthur say?
I didn't have a relationship with him, and not many guys do. He runs the show there, and everyone knows that, and that's the way it is. It's worked for him in the past. He's got a cup from that. But at the same time, there's other ways to do things. And that's to the Ottawa Citizen, Clark MacArthur, regarding it. Randy Carlyle, of course, the Leafs and the Sens are playing Hockey Night in Canada tonight.
So. Yeah, I think MacArthur had – I saw a quote earlier where he said he was really looking forward to this game and really hoping to score on his former team. So obviously there's some bad blood there between Carlyle and MacArthur.
Yeah, again, I mean, you know. Like Carlisle may have his ways and such, but and Bobby Ryan was in that doghouse, and I like the way he plays. But some of the guys I don't have an issue with because Clark MacArthur's, you know.
You would take Randy Carlisle more than Clark MacArthur, is what you're saying?
It's the issue is when you have the brawls with the guys like Bobby Ryan. You don't get along with those guys because, I mean, those are difference makers, and Clark MacArthur isn't.
Right, but when you talk about Randy Carlisle or a coach, is the head coach supposed to be everyone's friend? Like, is that – no, the coach is supposed to get the most out of his players
hockey games. But that's the thing, right? Because you're talking about friend. No, not necessarily get the most out of his players. Maybe the tact he was taking with those players wasn't getting the most out of
Randy
them.
Carlisle is
– don't get me wrong.
Randy Carlisle's got a Stanley Cup as a coach. He won a Norris Trophy. I mean, he commands respect. And he's one of the best coaches in the NHL. He was a great coach for the Moose. He's a great coach for the Ducks. And I think very highly of him. And these players taking these shots, they can do whatever they want in the media and make comments, but I don't see really, you know, what the point of it is. I think it reflects badly on the player. Clark MacArthur ended up getting signed by the Senators, but he was given opportunities on the third line last year for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and good hockey player, but, I'm not sure. I find it funny that players, not funny, but I find it interesting maybe that players take shots at coaches after they're let go by the team. It seems a little bit
backhanded. I don't think coaches have to be best friends with players, and I think that's probably not a good strategy. But I do think it's incumbent on coaches to have some lines of communication open to the players. If you're Clark MacArthur and you're struggling or you're not doing what the team wants, if the coach doesn't talk to you, how do you know what he's looking to get out of you?
Yeah, fair enough, Drew, but I mean, we don't know the other side of the story.
Obviously, we definitely don't know it.
I'm taking Randy Carlyle on that one.
There's three sides to every story. There's Clark MacArthur's side, there's Randy Carlyle's side, and then there's the truth.
Likely so. I don't disagree with that.
Let's talk about fighting in hockey. Ezzy and I touched on this on Wednesday on NHL Midweek, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. here
fight,
on
though.
TSN 1290. In
we
fact,
actually,
we're,
no, we, didn't
we, were
fight.
Quite, we were quite respectful of
no,
each other, I thought.
We took each other's helmets off and dropped the gloves.
Had
I was a little
scrap.
That nobody,
joke.
Nobody got hurt.
Well, thankfully nobody got hurt. But not the same. The same can't be said for George Parros.
What's the question?
Well, I can see that you're already ready to go, so I don't even have to ask a question.
You know what? I think, again, in this day and age, one thing happens and everybody blows it out of proportion. And obviously you're concerned about George Parros' well-being, and you want him to be okay. He was off balance as a result of a fight. It wasn't a punch to the face. I think people need to stop overreacting to everything. And maybe what needs to happen is some kind of a rule where 10 fights and you get suspended for a game or two or three. But I don't think taking out the fighting of the Jerome McGinleys and the Vinny LeCavaliers and the guys like that is necessary, and I think you still need that spontaneity. So if you want to try and get it out the stage fights, there's two things. Either get the linesman in the middle of those stage fights before they happen because they're staged and they take forever to actually develop, or alternatively, you suspend guys who fight 15, 20 times a year, and then they become dispensable because other guys can be brought in to fill that role. But I don't think, as a result of this one play, or another play, for example, that you need to just ban fighting entirely. I don't see, and I think a ton of people overreact to this stuff. And don't get me wrong, I don't not take it seriously, but you also don't want to make a rash decision.
Well, what would be a rash? We know what punching somebody in the head does. I mean,
because it never happens. It never happens in society, and it never happens in boxing.
If you and
UFC.
I went out on the street corner right now and started punching each other, we'd both be arrested.
Would we?
Yeah. If you and I went out and had a bare knuckle fight on the street corner, you don't think that we'd be arrested?
I would probably just walk by you guys and laugh. But no,
how many actual fights between two people do you think actually get reported?
I have no idea, obviously. But if it's in the public eye and and it's happening on the street corner, and it's happening in front of an audience. I mean, my point is, you know what the impact of punching somebody in the head is. And it's not called a concussion sometimes, it's called brain damage. It's called a mild traumatic brain injury. If every time analysts and commentators said so-and-so is out with a concussion, if they replaced it with that player is out with a mild traumatic brain injury, and one of the ways to get rid of mild traumatic brain injuries is to ban people from punching each other in the head.
So you're saying, okay, so hold on. So you're assuming that taking that out of the game would not increase headhunting or slashing or elbowing, because you can't do that.
I don't know that.
And I wonder if the consenting to it and being aware of it and protecting yourself because of it. First of all, how many of these fights actually land punches is another question.
A fair point.
And you're wearing a helmet, so your only punch is actually hitting your face.
Look, I understand that. I get to that point, and I understand
how often they hit him in the face. I mean, in reality, how often do they hit him in the face?
Not that often. With
the helmet rule now, you can't take your helmet off, sure, and you get a penalty.
I get all that. I get all that. And I'm not saying,
if boxers and UFC guys wore helmets, I'm sure there wouldn't be as much concussions.
Well, I mean, agreed. But boxers also don't go bare-fisted anymore.
I realize that, but a punch with a boxing glove isn't exactly.
I know, I think at this point in time, boxing has passed us as something that should be relevant as a sport. And I think that, and I mean,
I don't mind fighting. I think stage fighting is useless, but I don't mind. I don't mind regular fighting.
The problem with what happened and the discourse that happened after what happened with George Peros and Colton Orr is that the narrative becomes, okay, we need to eliminate fighting, right? And this has happened for years and years, Drew. Everyone says, let's eliminate fighting. And then what do the media do? They ask the players, based on what happened, should we eliminate fighting? Jacob Trouba comes on HNL, says, no, it's part of the game. Vander Kane got in a fight yesterday. So did that change anybody's opinion? And I know you're going to say, well, they don't want to cost anybody.
That's
their
not
job.
What I was going to say hold at on, that point.
Hold on. Okay. And it is a part of the game. That's not a debate. It happened last night. It'll happen again tonight. There will be fights. It is part of the game. You get a 5-minute penalty. The question we have to say, and you have a good point. When a guy gets a concussion / brain damage, or if you want to call it brain damage, then that's a concern. Now, are we going to stop, you know, just talking about it, or is the NHL and the NHLPA going to do something about it? Meaning, like Richie said, that's a great idea. Are the linesmen going to step in between Cam Jansen or Chris Barch and Colton Orr? Are they going to stand in between those guys and basically say, like, okay, no, we're not going to have a staged fight here? Mm-hmm. It's time for the NHL and the NHL to be proactive and not reactive and start doing something. Because even though I do think fighting has a place in the game, Drew, and this is what I was trying to say Wednesday, I do think they have to take out staged fighting and reduce the amount of ugly incidents that happen. Right now, they're doing nothing. The helmet thing, to me, it's very minimal as far as what reducing fighting in the NHL. That's not going to do that much. We've already seen guys take off each other's helmets.
And if Jim Rutherford's against it and Stevie Eiserman is against it, totally entitled to that. They don't dress many fighters, if at all, and that's fine. They can get rid of it that way, too.
The problem is they talked to the Darren Drager story, they mentioned 5 GMs. They didn't talk to all 30 GMs.
Right. Yeah, but they talked to 5 of the most respected GMs in the game.
Oh, and the other ones aren't respected?
Not as respected as I think some of those names.
I don't think that's appropriate.
I don't agree with that.
Okay, that's fine. Well, my point is, in society,
every GM's respected.
Yeah, that's fine. Every GM is respected, but when some people's names hold more weight than others. In society, in sports, most, or if not all, sports are now taking steps to reduce the amount of mild traumatic brain injuries that occur.
Yep.
Taking fighting out of the game. I'm not saying taking out body checking, because that's a bridge too far. That's part of the game that has to be there. But taking fighting out of the game, to me, is a pretty simple method to show that you are being proactive and you are doing, you're taking a very simple step.
How many concussions a year because of fighting?
I don't know. One is too many.
How many concussions a year because of fighting? And how many concussions a year because of body checking? And why is body checking acceptable and not fighting?
Because one is a fundamental part of the game, and one is a sideshow to the game.
Well, in 10 years from now, you can tell me that body checking isn't fundamental anymore because it's just run its course and you can't have it anymore.
You know what? I don't know what's going to happen 10 years from now, Richard, but I'm saying that if you can, I mean, there's a reason why they're getting rid of kill shots in the NFL. It's because they realize
doing a great job of that.
Well, they're trying. I mean, I'm not saying the NFL's pretty lousy at most everything they do in terms of player safety.
They don't care. They don't care.
I know they
don't really care.
I know that they don't. I know that they don't. And maybe
why do you care more about fighting being out than the players?
You know what? Because I don't believe the players are being honest when they're asked the question because their teammate who would lose their job is standing 2 feet away.
What about Carolina and Detroit who don't have enforcers and they still have guys there want fighting?
There's the brotherhood argument. If you're the first NHL player to stand up and say, I think the following X number of players should not be in the NHL anymore.
I'm not going to say it that way.
Everybody knows who they're talking about. Everybody knows who they're talking about when they would say that. You know, I just think that...
Okay, so let me give you an example. So you're skating down the ice and Grant Clutsam is cross-checking Kessel and cross-checking Kessel or working on Kessel and just, you know, dirty play after dirty play after dirty play.
Okay.
And then Kessel can't fight because he doesn't have a fighter and he swings around and he swings his stick at him and hits him in the neck.
I understand your point.
That's what I'll revert to because that's what you're going to revert to.
You think that's what's going to, it's going to become martial law out there?
Because it'll still happen, first of all. If we get rid of it, it'll still happen. And the guys will come and they'll just be vicious in different ways. I mean, the intensity of a National Hockey League game is it's a different world.
You'll
kill to win. I mean, in reality, you'll kill to win.
I get all that. I get that. Sports is at a precipice when it comes to brain injuries.
But I want to get back to the question, how many concussions come from fighting?
I don't know the answer, and I'm sure the answer is not very many.
That's what I'd like to know. I don't know the answer either. I'm not asking you to tell me. I'm just asking because how many concussions come from fighting vis-a-vis other forms of injury, other forms of play? And if it's 5%, sure, it doesn't mean you don't overlook it. But take into account, how did those fights happen? Were those between stage fighters? And also, the other thing is, Drew, the fighting is part of the game. When you get a natural fight that happens, like in a Ginla-LeCavalier fight in the final, those guys aren't practicing fighting. So most of the time, it's useless.
Right.
But the stage fighters practice boxing.
Right.
That's the difference. So I don't think it needs to be out of the game. But again, you want to get stage fighters out of the game. And I've also said this before. If the GMs are so adamant about it, then stop dressing these guys who are fairly useless on the ice.
Right.
Well, good. That's
I've always said I don't see the need for a stage fighter.
And
you want to be team
and
tough.
The NHLPA, Richie, team also tough. Also has to take some leadership there because Bob McKenzie pointed this out.
Said that for years, too.
In 2009. No, but you know, the point being that in 2009, the NHL was trying to take steps to penalize players more and all that. And the NHLPA said absolutely not. So the NHLPA, I always think that They do have an impact on this. I mean, they represent the players. So,
but the idea is that they have to represent their players who are fighters. They have to represent the players who would have those jobs if they weren't fighters.
Right.
Don't they?
Yep.
I think there's a lot of conflicts of interest, and there's no easy answer to any of this, besides the fact I'm sure that we're going to be talking about it again later on in this year, but just because something's going to happen again.
Yep.
It just happens. And yep. I mean, we're all entitled to our opinions, and yep. As long as we can articulate them in a respectful manner.
It's important to talk about it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's important to have the debate because there are people on either side of the fence, Drew, and there's also people that are kind of in the middle because, you know, it's scary. Like, there's some people that are watching their first game and they see that and they're like, what is going on here? If you're not a person that watches hockey all the time, you're kind of like, you know, does this happen all the time? It doesn't.
I'm the first to admit that I'm a hypocrite because when there's a fight in a game, mm-hmm. and if I'm watching the game or I'm attending the game, I'm standing up to watch the fight. So I'm the first to admit that I'm a hypocrite. I'm just saying that, you know, I thought Gary was pretty bang on in his column this week when he said the money issue involved in it is eventually going to drive the final decision on this matter.
It might. That's very possible. But I mean, the money from it, and how do you get to that point, and what is it, and what about hitting? What about many other factors that come from it?
Yeah.
What about the equipment? What about the elbow pads? What about? There's so many factors there in terms of the money. Like, I don't know if you can say that one part. I mean, it certainly would be a factor. But again, what percentage of the concussions are fighting? What percentage are because of blindside hits? What percentage are because of the equipment's too strong or just too tough for no reason? What percentage of this? Well, I mean, you need to have some evidence here.
I don't dispute that. I get all that. It's just, to me, if you can take away two guys punching each other in the head, that to me is a reasonable thing to do.
Again,
if they're taking their helmets off.
I know. I get it.
And if they're sitting in the UFC, well, UFC is the most popular thing going.
Not for me. I won't watch
yeah,
it.
Yeah, not for you and not for me. I can't stand it. But for most people.
Yeah. And
making money hand over fist.
Well, and that's why everybody's entitled to their opinion. And I mean, there's no right or wrong answer.
Is that growing in popularity? I think it is. Is it not?
Yeah. I'm sure it is.
It was just in Winnipeg and it was sold out.
Wait till somebody dies. So wait till somebody dies.
Yeah, God forbid.
Wait till somebody dies on the ice, or wait till somebody dies. I think the first death is going to occur on the NFL field.
It's possible.
The way those
because the percentage of guys in steroids in that league is ridiculous.
Yeah, the way that happened, the way they are in the NFL, I think that's going to be the. I think you're going to see a death on an NFL football field within the next 5 years.
I hope not.
I really hope that's not the case. Yeah.
I really hope that's not the case as well. But they're too big and they're too strong, and they and like you said, Richard, they don't care. All they care about is kill to win.
It sounds fine when we're sitting here, and that's fine. But when you're in the game and some guy says something to you that really gets under your skin, and it's a tie game, and you see him coming up the middle,
yeah,
you want to win,
and you can take his head off,
and you can take his head off,
yeah.
And what do? Most guys in the NHL, because they're so competitive, will take his head off.
I agree. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Seven minutes past the top of the hour. Here on the TSN 1290, this is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg, producer Tim, Michael Remus. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is www.illegalcurve.com.
NHL news and notes.
NHL news and notes for this Saturday afternoon. The season's only about two games in, but there's always news coming out of the NHL cities. The first, we start in Pittsburgh, where James Neal is out indefinitely with an upper body injury.
UBI.
I shortened it in the show plan to a UBI. I'm actually glad I remembered what that meant. I was concerned I was going to forget. But anyways, he's out indefinitely. Only played five shifts on in their season opener.
If you screwed that, Drew, we're dropping you in a BFI.
Nice. You know, something for the Penguins to worry about, or just, you know, a guy is going to just be a little bit fresher at the end of the year because he's going to miss a couple weeks at the start?
Well, you know, fair point with it, but I'd say in that division, Drew, with the Islanders and the Rangers and the Flyers, and it's not going to be any. You know, Pittsburgh's a great team; they're going to make the playoffs, but it makes it harder for you, right? And James Neal is just a natural goal scorer, and I think one thing you didn't address in that question, which I think we should address, is the fact that James Neal is playing for a spot on Team Canada.
Yep,
and that really hurts his chances.
Yep. Because you're performing, it's the first half of the season that you're showcasing your talents to Stevie Yzerman and the other guys, right, Drew? So I didn't see the injury specifically.
It looked relatively innocuous, and then then he didn't really get up very well, and he was just sort of skated off, and that was the end of him. It was just as routine of a place, I think, just sort of just inside or just outside of the offensive blue line. And he got tangled up and he went down, but it wasn't anything that struck me as being a problem.
And having Neal out is not good because he's one of the top goal scorers in the NHL and he's good on the power play. And you hope that it is only 2 weeks or maybe even a little bit less. And right now they're trying to win hockey games and it's not going to help their chances right now. But they're a deep enough team that they should be okay without him. And they'll have to elevate someone else to that second line because he was playing with Malkin and quite regularly on that second line. So
best goal scorer on the squad.
Who's going to take? Who do you think fills that role?
Nobody.
Well, I mean, obviously, no one's going to equal him. But who do you think is going to play that? Who's going to get that great opportunity at playing second line right wing, or is it just going to be a by committee sort of thing?
It depends on how they want to shift through the lines and what they want to do with Malkin and Crosby, and probably they keep Crosby's line together, but they can always shift him around, right?
Sure.
So line to game to game, but having somebody ready to go to fill that role, there's nobody.
Is that part of the problem with the Penguins? I mean, their depth offensively isn't to write home about.
Yeah.
After their second line.
Yeah, you lose Kennedy, you lose Cook. I mean, yeah, that's pretty big. And yeah, that point's well taken, Drew. But you still have the two best centers in the world, arguably, although some would say Taves.
Was a little bit unheralded in coming to Pittsburgh, had a goal in their first game, was Chuck Kobusu. Mm-hmm. He's another guy that people will remember from Calgary and the Wild, but he's a guy that will be more of a third-line guy.
He may take the spot, but not take
yeah,
the spot.
And,
not,
and, James yeah. Neal's going right back where he was
It was
before.
An interesting situation with Pittsburgh and their cap problems, Drew, because Thomas Vokoun might miss the entire year. And it might be Jeff Zatkoff, mm-hmm. who's the permanent backup there in Pittsburgh for at least 3 months. They're saying the blood clot problem that Thomas Vokoun has is about 3 to 6 months. And they actually, what they did was they put him on long-term injury reserve, and they had to send Bo Bennett down to the ECHL, if you guys saw that. And now Bo Bennett is back up in the NHL. He's a guy that is going to get some chances on most lines, because he's a guy that was a high draft pick, and he's got some offensive talent, got some good wheels, so... There's some opportunity there for other guys to replace, like the Cooks and the Kennedys. And, you know, because up the middle, they're solid there with Crosby, Malkin, Sutter. And so
right.
I picked the Penguins to win the Cup. I mean, I think they're still an elite team. I think the team that lost last year in the second round is not the real Penguins.
Conference finals.
Conference finals.
What's the rule for LTIR and the salary cap? I think you have to miss a minimum of 25 games. Is that what the rule is?
Don't know off the top of my head.
Okay, because I mean the Leafs just put Mark Frazier on long term injury reserve, and that's after he got injured in that I think that Philadelphia game he got injured in the first game in Montreal, and they put him on LTIR as a result, and that was able to free them up with a little bit of some cap room there. Other news and notes this week: Ryan Nugent-Hopkins ahead of schedule in my books. He returns to the Edmonton Oilers lineup on Monday. Fortunate for the Jets that they managed to avoid him last week.
At least 10 games or 24 days for long-term injury. Reserve.
10 games. Okay, yeah. Sorry, I got the 24 part wrong.
Well, it's a huge addition for the Oilers. Your best center, your most creative offensive player, such a great passer. You know, you have Taylor Hall apparently still staying at center until Sam Gagne is back, which some people who follow the Oilers think is a good decision. But, I mean, that's huge, Drew. You know, he had an off year last year, but they gave him the contract. He's such a talented player, and he just makes the players around him better. So if you're the Oilers, I mean, you need that guy back to really have a chance this year. And I looked at that lineup and I thought when they're healthy, the offensive firepower is awesome. So that's huge for them. No, you can't. I don't think it can be overstated.
Yep. And Taylor Hall will be able to move back to the wing. I think, I don't know if he'll do it immediately with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins back
after Gagne, I think.
But yeah, it might. I was going to say they might keep him at center there, playing with Ryan Smith and Alex Hemsky. But when you have a guy with his immense talent, it's great that he's back on.
Was that a thought in your head that came up? And is that what happened is?
Yeah, what was that? The Windows like close, like defaults?
No, it's when you had a different thought. It just pops up like through your head on air.
Yeah, it's like a light bulb and it goes off.
It's my eureka moment. Yeah, but no, I mean, it's good that Nugent Hopkins is coming back quicker. I thought he was going to be out maybe a week or two more weeks, so that's good.
Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment, Escapades, Rapid Fire, Cheers and Jeers. A lot of fun still ahead. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Remus. I love Bruce. This is a great song. I'm going down, but you've played the same song 3 or 4 weeks in a row.
You think I know any Bruce songs?
It's written like 500 songs, probably more than that. Can you get some flexibility here?
Salary cap and flexibility.
Remus is going to be on long-term injury reserve before we know it.
That's right.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment for this Saturday afternoon here on TSN 1290. I think we'll be able to get to a little bit of rapid fire, but of course it's time for the weekly escapade section of this fine program. And what we're going to do is we're going to look back at...
Isn't there theme music?
Well, the theme music won't be able to be played because...
Why not?
Aren't we going to be playing the audio...
This is a radio station.
I know, but we have the audio of from the tips that you gave to running a successful hockey draft right. A couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I thought that was one of my best segments ever.
Yeah,
it was a great segment. I mean, the theories were great, but applying those theories to real life is different.
Yes. Oh, really?
So let's go back a few weeks ago to our fantasy preview show, where this is tip number one that Ezzy insisted makes a good fantasy hockey draft. So this is tip number one.
I have mine on Mondays. This is great.
The Wi-Fi connection is secure.
That's important.
And available
important.
To everyone. Make sure that you know the password, and you can give everyone the password out. So make sure that if you need the internet, it's there.
So as he suggests that the internet has to be available to have a good, successful hockey draft. Remus, how was your internet connection at Ezzy's hockey draft?
Well, I couldn't Google search anything. I couldn't even look at who was injured.
First of all,
my partner's internet was not.
That's not true.
The password was like jumbled and hard to find.
It was jumbled. It worked. Wow. I was online. I went to the draft. That's just incorrect. You guys make up falsities. There was the internet. I had the password and the username, and I was online. The fact that Remus's connection was a little bit sloppy, that's not my fault.
We had trouble updating the Google Doc and communicating with out-of-towners.
Oh, really?
Because of it.
That's not good.
For the record, I couldn't get online either.
That's not true. You were online.
I was not online.
Well, if other people were online, and you... I mean, that's not my fault. That's your computer.
It was a little sketchy. That's all I can say. Ezzy's tip number two.
Announce the rules clearly at the beginning of the draft, how many players you're going to take, what the point system is. Make sure that everybody knows so there's no confusion.
I'll give you credit on this one. It was pretty straightforward. Your draft has always been straightforward. One goal, one assist. I don't think there was much confusion on that.
I don't think so.
The two drops.
The only issue was sort of determining at the start of the draft how many players you were going to take, either 12 or 14, but that wasn't a big deal. One thing I would like to see incorporated for next year, or the playoff pool, is that the draft number is determined ahead of time, so everybody knows what their draft slot is ahead of time, so they can come into the draft with a bit of a game plan.
The only reason our hockey pool we didn't have that is because a couple of teams dropped out, and it seems like that happens every year, but I'll do that next year.
Because they don't know when they're going to pick. If they knew when they were picked, they wouldn't be
That's
dropping out.
It's because they had other commitments.
Tip number three, I believe, or this is a separate tip, this is an addendum, this comes from Michael Remus himself.
If you're doing it at home, make sure you have a lot of extension cords.
Right, okay,
and
here.
Plugs.
Remus, you're taking over my segment here. You get lots of time on the round table. Just, let me go here.
The warm-up.
Extension cords weren't a problem. I was able to... my computer didn't work, so I didn't need to plug into anything because I didn't have any internet. So
Remus,
I was fine on that
front. Remus, correct me if I'm wrong, but were you not low battery?
Man, there were no plugs in the draft area. I had to take my computer outside the draft area. So I couldn't use it during
that
the draft.
That was Remus's rule, not mine, the extension cord. So.
Fair enough. Also, that's true. As I'll back you on that, Remus should have provided his own extension cord.
No,
cords.
You're running the draft.
It's like when you don't let people use your headphones.
Yeah, that's true.
You're running the draft. You got to make sure that I can plug in some. There was like one outlet that was like way
and
the other end of the
room. And I found it for you. I found it for you.
Yeah, but what good is I?
Remus,
you're
selfish.
Remus is just
you're
all over me today.
Ezzy's tip number three has to deal with injuries.
Number three, injuries. Make sure that you have an updated injury sheet because everybody's wondering, is this guy injured? Is that guy injured?
I objected to that. That's going to be... Here's my objection
to
that
comment. Isn't a court
of law? Yeah.
Object? What is this? Is Judge Drudy back? Judge Drudy's presiding?
You know what? I picked a guy who was injured, and you guys told me he was, so I was happy
about
that.
And I got to be honest.
Who picked?
I don't want to say, because I'm a proposed expert on a radio station.
It was RNH.
You picked Nugent Hopkins in the pool?
It was my partner wanted him. I didn't want to pick him.
Andrew McKinnon also selected Nathan McKinnon. I thought that was great.
So your partner, your new girlfriend's making your picks for you too now?
Stop.
Along those lines, I managed to do the necessary prep work to know who was injured and who was not injured.
I couldn't Google search because I didn't have internet.
Prep ahead of time.
I tried looking
Remus,
him up.
What happened? Was Rod Brindamore not available?
That was you.
a worker never blames his tools.
I think you should also prep ahead of the pool, so in case you have instances like this come up, you should know who's injured prior to while you're sitting there and on the clock.
Uh-huh. No,
speaking of on the clock, tip number four.
Number four on my list is put a time limit on the picks. Everybody's been in a hockey pool where someone's sitting there, ruffling through papers, and it takes them 25 minutes to pick somebody.
I agree.
Put a minute to minute and a half time limit on those picks.
I can assure you, good listeners, that there was no clock counting down anything to do with a time limit on picks.
First of all, Reem and Drew, we are all in the hockey pool, first of all, so we are all there, just so the listeners know that, but... I'm not going to sit there with a stopwatch.
I wasn't there.
Clock you just in, said clock that in. Was one of your rules.
No, I said it's a minute.
Your rules.
No, but Reem, it was like a minute and a half of, you know, it's out there. Like, everyone knows how long a minute and a half is. I'm not going to sit there like, you know, like I'm a track coach.
Some people took forever, man. I picked players who are already taken, including me.
Yeah, I actually, that was, yeah. You know, I'll give you guys that one. The first three, I think, were covered.
There clearly was no time limit.
What's the last one?
Well, speaking of things that weren't there, here's tip number five that Ezzy had.
Five. Now, number five, and this is the most important of Ezzy's five tips on how to host a successful hockey pool. Whether or not you're at home or you're at a restaurant, make sure that there's a good amount of drinks and snacks available around you. Because some drafts can go 2.5 hours, 3 hours, and you don't want to be in a situation where all you have in your house is water and stale bread.
I would have... Having stale bread would have been an upgrade.
Would have killed for stale bread.
Okay, just for the... So the
and
listeners,
water with ice.
Because you guys are killing me here. We did the draft somewhere where it was closed. The bar and the restaurant were closed. It was a Sunday night. I emailed everybody and I said, do you want the bar to be open? Everyone said no. So, you know what? People ordered pizza. We had pizza.
That's not supplying food.
Yeah, you got to supply the food, man.
I could have brought a couple bags of chips and maybe some jujubes.
Look, yeah, see, I have mine. I have mine coming up this week, and I have it at a restaurant, so it's easier. You guys complaining? You know, you guys didn't bring any food either. As far as I can tell.
Yeah, exactly.
These are Ezzy's tips to run his draft. He's running the draft. He's going to make sure that there's this stuff there. That's true. What he's telling the listeners.
And in pools I've been in with you, Remus, you have provided not only chips but computers.
This year, you guys got to give me this much. We've had successful pools in the past where all of my five rules were covered. This was a bad one. I promise that at the playoff pool, I'll cover all of them. I'll make sure there's snacks, extension cords, plugs,
Wi-Fi,
adequate Wi-Fi, injury sheets, clear rules.
I just have your house then.
You guys, all I'm saying, Reem, is give me another chance.
No, wait, I go in your pools every year. They're great pools.
Okay.
It was
Thanks.
Fun. It's just, you know.
It was a bad one.
No, it was a good time.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Before we start Cheers and Jeers, you're not allowed to jeer Ezzy for his draft.
No. I'm cheering John Scodry. You mentioned, alluding to our earlier conversation, the fact that enforcers or people wouldn't speak out against stage fighting. And John Scott said to the Buffalo News, the stage fighting, the fights that don't really mean anything, I can do without those. And I think that's coming from an enforcer. So, again, I think limiting that would serve the league well. I think limiting entirely would not.
Ezra?
You know, we talked about Timu. This is an easy one. I'm going to cheer Timu's last game in Winnipeg. It's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow night. And, I can't not cheer Timu. So that's my cheer. That's an easy one.
That is an easy one. I'm wrapping up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer the Montreal Canadiens. They held a practice earlier this week in Lac-Mégantic in Quebec, which is, of course, the community that had that devastating fire and explosion earlier this summer. So kudos to the Canadiens. They had already held a scrimmage at the Bell Center where money raised went to that town, and then they held a practice there this past week to help that town just take their minds off the tragedy that happened earlier this summer. So kudos to them.
Yeah, good on the Montreal Canadiens.
That's it for this week in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to John Paddock for joining us to reminisce about Timu Solani. Big thank you to our sponsors, the Certified General Accountants Association of Manitoba, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, and the Linden Market Dental Center. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve is where to find us on that social media site. And the website, as I mentioned, latest NHL and Winnipeg Jets news is www.IllegalCurve.com. Reminder, NHL Midweek, Wednesday night, 6 p.m. here on this fine station. For producer Tim and producer Michael Remus, for my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.